So today we'll be looking at 2 Timothy chapter 1, verses 15 to 18. And if you have your Bibles, you can pull those out. But before we start, I have a question that I'd like to ask all of you. And it is that if you could have any superpower, what would it be? What superpower would you like? Before you answer it, I actually have a video for us to look at. And this is produced by the National Geographic. They actually asked some of the brightest minds today this very same question. And I think that it actually is very revealing. It actually shows us a lot about the things that these bright minds value. And so let's watch this together. And as you're watching it, I want you to answer that question yourself. What superpower would you like to have?
Any superpower, that's a difficult one.
Any superpower, what it would be. Having the ability to magically make people understand.
The power to read other people's minds, but I could turn it on and off, because sometimes you just don't want to know.
Teleporting would be pretty cool.
I'd like to be able to fly.
Food alchemy, to turn anything and everything into any kind of food that I want. I think that would be the most awesome superpower.
If I had a superpower, it would be to be invisible.
Oh, definitely be invisible.
It's gotta be invisible, right? Because like, if you can be invisible, it's open access. You can see the entire world in the craziest way.
I'd go to the White House. I'd listen in on all the conversations.
By the way, I'd want to read not only people's minds, but the minds of other animals, like dogs. I always wondered what they're thinking.
Okay, so hopefully you all got a chance to think about this. If you could have a superpower, any superpower you could imagine, what would it be? Can I hear some responses? Just kind of toss them out. What superpower would you like? To be super smart, okay. Anybody else? Anybody want to fly? Nobody? Jimmy, all right. Anybody else? What would you guys like? Super speed. I heard something in the back. Clone yourself so you take care of the kids and do everything else you want. That's awesome. All right, so Paul, as we look at 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 15 and 18, he's actually thinking the same thing, the very exact same thing, but he's thinking about it for Timothy, right? He is, as he's writing this letter, he is preparing for his own death, and he wants to entrust to Paul, or to Timothy, some things that will allow him to faithfully carry out the work of the gospel. And what he asked for is he asked that that Timothy learn to love. And we'll look at that today. And so the one thing I want you all to keep in mind is that we are called to love. Not only does Paul call Timothy to learn how to love and steward and host people well, but as we read 2 Timothy, these are the very things that he wants for us. He wants us to love. He wants us to love. So, before I start, there's a weird thing that happens. You know, sometimes you hear a message and you're like, oh yeah, I know this message. I've heard this message a lot. And so, you know what? It's like, imagine if you showed up to calculus and they're like, okay, today we're going to talk about 2 plus 2. You'd be like, oh, you know, I know this, so I'm just going to check out. And funny story, a couple years ago, I don't know if Solana is going to mind if I share this story about her. I'm going to share a story about Solana. Good friend of mine, right? And second year that she was part of our church, the first year she actually went to, like 2 weeks into joining our church, she went to a retreat with us, which is, I don't know why she went. It was like she hardly knew anyone. She went to retreat. Second year she goes, she shows up and I'm like, Solana, there's all these freshmen that are coming. I need help with hospitality. Can you go with me? And she goes, yeah, I can go with you. And so we leave an hour before all the students leave. And we start driving to Genesis Ranch. Right? I don't know if you guys remember Genesis Ranch. I've been there like 3 or 4 times. I'm pretty sure I know how to get there. And Solana's like, do you have GPS? Right? Do you know how to get there? I'm like, Solana, come on. You know, like, I've been there several times. She goes, are you sure? Because like everything looks the same. I'm like, you know, I think I got this. Long story short, I actually miss my exit. And I take an extra hour, and Solana and I have to race into Genesis Ranch to set everything up so that when the freshmen get there, that everything will be ready. And luckily we get there at the nick of the time, but one thing I learned was that I don't know as much as I think I know. Right? I don't know as much as I think I know. And I want you to keep that in mind, because as we listen to this message that Paul speaks to Timothy about love, we are thinking, I know this. You know, this all makes sense. I've heard this message in many different ways, in many different times in my life. I know this. But my challenge to you is to listen again. And perhaps God is wanting to challenge you one more time. Because love is a commandment in the stage in our life. God is calling us to love again. So, without dragging this on anymore, I'd like us to look at 2 Timothy chapter 1, verses 15 to 18. And what we're going to do is we're actually going to break this up into two chunks. Look at the passage, the first part of the passage and the second part of the passage. And before we start, here is kind of the layout of this verse. You can actually read it really quickly. It's only three verses. But the general structure is Paul talks about these two guys, Phygellus and Hermogenes, right, who have fallen away from the faith. Right? They have left the faith. And then he talks about this one guy, Onesiphorus, right, who is living out the faith, right? And the thing that is different is that one guy loves Paul and loves the gospel, and two guys have abandoned it. Okay, so let's look at it, the first chunk together, and I'll read it for us. It reads, "You are aware that all who are in Asia turned away from me, among whom are Phygellus and Hermogenes." That's it. Okay, very simple. But I want to make a couple of observations. As we talk about discipleship, and as Paul is thinking about entrusting the whole of the gospel into Timothy's hands, right, there are a couple of observations that I would like to make about this passage. First, Paul failed. As he was taking the message of God to Asia, he actually fails. Because, as he writes, all who are in Asia turned away from me. Right? All turned away from me. Now, this doesn't mean they turned away from the gospel, but that Paul failed in his initiative to try to make disciples, because all these people he had been trying to disciple actually turn away from him. This is really weird for us to think about failure, especially as Paul is preparing to give Timothy the gospel, to give him the ministry of the gospel. Because for us, we don't really like to think about our failures, right? When we're trying to talk ourselves up, we point to all the really great things that we can do. But Paul here, as he is summarizing his ministry, he talks about failure. And failure is so necessary. If we are to talk about any of the things that God is calling us to do, if we are to talk about church planting, about reaching out to our city, about reaching our coworkers or our classrooms with the gospel, about ministering maybe to the homeless, right, to the disadvantaged, we have to talk about failure. And Paul, very interestingly, as he's trying to disciple Timothy, he not only highlights the great things about himself or the things that he's accomplished, but he highlights his failure. And to actually find out what happened in Asia Minor, we have to kind of like, you know what people do like with Facebook, kind of go look at the Facebook history, double back a couple years, and like, oh yeah, that's where they were in 2008. Well, we actually have to do a little bit of that with the Bible, zip back to Acts 19:20, and find out what happened in Asia. Okay, you don't have to go there, but let me summarize what happens. So Paul goes to Asia, or Asia's actually Ephesus, right? So he's in Ephesus. In Ephesus, Acts chapter 19 to 20, he sends Timothy off, right? And he stays in Ephesus, and he's doing the ministry, and he actually brings a large number of people to Christ. And because of this, some of the people there, this guy named Demetrius, the silversmith, whose job it is to make idols, starts losing his business, like starts losing money, because people are you know, converting to Christianity. And so Demetrius, what he does is he raises a riot, right? And this riot actually wants, this riot of people, they actually want to kill Paul. So bad was this that Paul actually writes in 1 Corinthians 15, talking about Asia, that it was like he was fighting against beasts, right? That's how terrible it is. This actually is so traumatizing for Paul that he said that in 2 Corinthians 1, 8, 10, he actually despaired of his life, right? He felt as if he had received the sentence of death. In that moment, he thought, I'm going to die. I'm not going to make it. And we're so afraid to talk about failure, you know? But Paul here, he just puts it out there. I'm an apostle. I'm called to plant churches. And guess what? I actually failed really big. And this region, Ephesus, is actually the region that Timothy now is in charge of. And Paul says, you know what? Everything seems to be going pretty smoothly in Ephesus, but guess what? Remember this? I failed. I failed in Ephesus. And I want us to keep this in mind, that if we are to live out God's purpose, we will fail. I've had this experience. I know that you probably have as well. I want you to think back to your freshman year. And those of us, you know, who maybe started at UT or maybe have gone to another university, you may remember coming on campus and seeing so many homeless people and thinking to yourself, oh, I need to do something. Well, my freshman year, I actually saw the same thing, and I was like, oh, this is terrible. There's so many homeless people. And what I did one time was I met a homeless guy, and I didn't have much money. And this guy was sharing with me that he just needs a little bit of money to take the bus. Right? He needs to go somewhere. He needs to take the bus. And there's a Greyhound station down the street, and it needs like 70 bucks. And, you know, I can't remember the exact situation, but there was something that was so urgent. And so I was like, you know what? I can give you 70 bucks. I just got to go to the bank. You know, I'll give you some money. And so I run to the bank, I give him money, and, you know, I kind of pat myself on the back. And then afterwards, like two, 3 days later, I see him again on the street, and he asked me the same question. It's like, I was like, what? This just happened. 2 days ago, you asked me for money for a Greyhound, and I gave you money, and now you're asking me for the same exact thing. And I felt so used. There was just a sense of betrayal and a sense of failure. Now, this is common, that feeling of failure. If you attempt anything great for the gospel, you will feel that. Not only that, my second point is people will let you down. People in ministry will let you down. Now, this is really difficult for us to talk about. In this case, it is Phygellus and Hermogenes, right? And these two guys, it is believed that they were at some point a part of the church. And the really terrible thing about this is the less likely we are to think that someone will let us down, the moment when they let us down, it is that much more painful, right? I don't know if that makes sense to you all, but the more likely that we think they're going to be faithful, the more let down we will be when they actually let us down. And the thing is, some of us may be thinking, no, not our church. Like, people are so great. You know, I try so hard to be trustworthy. But it's possible, and it will happen. It is only a matter of time, because we are broken. We are all broken people. I remember, recently, very good friend of mine was talking to me, and, I care about them a lot. And she was just saying, hey, Pastor Tufu, I don't know if you realize this, but you actually hurt me really, really bad. And I was taken aback. I was kind of shocked. To my recollection, I've always tried my best to kind of take care of people. And as she began to kind of tell me her story, I was like, oh my gosh, I just started feeling like this big. I felt so small. Like, I can see exactly how that was so painful, how I let you down, right? And I would not be surprised to think that I've only let one person down. I imagine I've let many people down. And it was such a horrible feeling. As Paul recounts his story, this is for him incredibly painful. He is hurt. He's preparing to die, and this is what he's thinking about. as we continue reading through 2 Timothy, you're going to find not just Phygellus and Hermogenes, but many other people have let Paul down. And these, more than the 40 lashes, these are the things that are the most painful for him. So what do we do? What do we do? Hopefully there's a good resolution in here. Unfortunately, this passage says nothing about resolution, right? I think some weird thing happens for us when we're young. We think that every wound will heal. You just give it some time, right? Take a little medication, and every wound will heal. But there will come a time in our life where we will get injured and we will not heal. We may lose our sight slowly, and guess what? It does not come back. Like many of my good friends and like older relatives, maybe you might get a stroke. Guess what? There are limitations to medicine. You cannot heal completely. You might be going through a breakup, or you might have gone through a breakup. Guess what? Chances are you might never restore that relationship. I think the weird thing is, in this stage of our life, we think that every wound, right, has an equally good scar, and we're going to be completely healed, and things will be like it was when everything was good. But the sad reality is it's not. Paul is nearing his death, and he is recounting all of these wounds and scars that have not healed. In ministry, like in life, wounds do not heal, and Paul does not try to sugarcoat this. In fact, he talks about it. He says it hurt, period. Not only does it hurt, but people will see our failures, and guess what? They will judge us. They will judge us. Paul writes, "You are aware, Timothy." Like, not just you, everybody in Asia knows what happened. There's no hiding this. I think for us, as we attempt great things for God, as we say, I'm going to take the gospel to my family, as I'm going to take the gospel to this friend of mine, I'm going to take the gospel to our city, we have to realize and accept the fact that we may fail in a big way. We might make a spectacle of our failure. And guess what? We might never outlive our pain. Ministry is not easy. As we're talking about discipleship, I want to remind you all that ministry is not easy. It is very hard, but it's worth what we put in. It's worth it because Christ is worth it. Now, here's the thing. Once we have failed, let's say you've attempted something great. You shared your testimony with someone and they've rejected you. You shared the gospel with your family and they've ridiculed you for it. We cannot in that moment let our failure, that sense of dishonor, having lost respect among people, that sense of rejection, to decide what we will do. This is hard for me to say because it's hard for me to say to myself, but when we fail, the only option is sometimes just to pick ourselves up, all wounds and bruises and everything included. We are living in two different stories, in two different worlds. In the one story, the world will tell us, if you do everything right, you will live a successful life, a long, successful life. If you are intelligent, we're going to fast forward you to the frontier of our society. Right? You get to do all the cool stuff. You get to have all the cool technology, right, that Allie's dad has, right? You get to do all the cool stuff, right? You get to have all the sociological make all those sociological changes. We want you up front representing us. And then we come to church and we hear another story that's very different from that. We hear God says to us, come, take your alabaster jar, the most expensive thing in your life, and break that. Give that up for me. That's not the same story that the world tells us. We hear it many other ways. Elijah, he comes to the widow who has one small jar of oil, right, and flour left. He says, give that to God. That's not for you to eat, even though you're going to starve. You're supposed to give that to God. We hear it another way. Abraham brings his son to God, and God says, okay, now take your son, your only son, in your old age, when you're not likely to have another child, and sacrifice him. And we hear Jesus call out to us, rich young man, take all of your possessions and give it to the poor. All the things that you have stored up, give that away to the poor. God calls us to give, which is so different from the world, in spite of our pain. That's so different. This doesn't make any sense. Where does the love, right, come in? Paul starts out by saying, painting a picture of what the world is like, what ministry is like, because in one sense, there is not much love to be dished out in ministry. A lot of times, you give love and you get hatred back. Like, that doesn't seem like a really great superpower. But God also says and promises that love is powerful. And we see that in verses 16 to 18. Let me read that for us. Paul, writing to Timothy, says, "May the Lord grant mercy to the household of Onesiphorus." And the reason it says household of Onesiphorus is most likely because Onesiphorus is dead. I don't know if you guys realize that. Because otherwise he would have just said, "Grant mercy to Onesiphorus," right? But he says, "to the household of Onesiphorus. For he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. But when he arrived in Rome, he searched for me earnestly and found me." He most likely found Paul in prison. "May the Lord grant him to find mercy from the Lord on that day. And you well know all the service he rendered at Ephesus." There's a couple of things I want to talk about here. And it's getting warm, so we'll call it a day. But these things are very important, okay? First is that our hospitality will refresh God's people. Now, this message is not just about reaching out to the world around Timothy. This is a message that Paul is giving Timothy about the church. Our hospitality, like Onesiphorus' hospitality, is meant to refresh God's people. There is nothing. This is obviously nothing new if you're part of our church, right? We talk about hosting people well and being good hosts all the time. But I want us to imagine this. Imagine that God has given us this living water, right? And someone walks into our church and they're thirsty. Whether we can see it on their face or not, they are thirsty. They're wanting this water. Imagine how they would feel if we gave them a cup of water. You're dying of thirst and someone gives you a cup of water, and immediately you are refreshed. Your thirst is quenched. That is the vision of our church. Right? As people come in, we don't just want to give them a good show and song, right? Good sermon, hopefully good sermon, right? We don't want to just have like good people, but we're actually wanting to refresh them with the Spirit of God. And we have this in abundance. We only need to ask, and we have it. We are called to be good hosts. Recently, someone brought this up with me. And they're saying, "Hey, you know, Pastor, I don't know if you realize, but during Ignite, there are some people who are like complaining because, you know, like their small groups went somewhere and they'd already been there, and you know, they didn't want to pay any money, and so they were just really frustrated." And it really kind of took me back, and I was like, I don't know if this is the right heart. You know, I don't want to call anybody out, but I imagine this is not just this one person, you know, but this is so many of us. We might have thought to ourselves, "Oh, this is not what I wanted. I wanted to go somewhere else," right? But that complaining, right, it does something to us. It takes away the power for us to refresh and to encourage and to nourish, right? And this is so important for us in hosting people. I love bringing people over my house. I love feeding people, right? But I want you to imagine this. Imagine you showed up to my house and I had this wonderful dish, right, prepared for you, and it's exactly the thing that you love. And you come in and I go, "Oh my gosh, you again?" I'm like, "Okay, here, take this." I just give it to him. I'll give it to you. How would it feel? Right? Maybe the food might be good, but then something about that would feel so wrong, right? I think we as a church need to remember this. You know, because this is our home in many sense, and we get to kind of choose like the things that we get to participate in. But for some people, as they come in, right, They are getting that cup of water for the first time. They are being hosted for the first time. And over the next couple of weeks, we'll have many opportunities to host people. We've got Austin Kickball, which Tim has been telling us about. We have Life Group. And guess what? During the summer, all these people have free time and they kind of want to check different things out. And as they come to our church, it is so important for us to host them well. We have this privilege of providing them something that refreshes them, something that they have not experienced before. Secondly, our willingness to embrace the shame that they are experiencing, that believers are experiencing, helps us as a church embolden them. Paul writes, he often, speaking of Onesiphorus, he often refreshed me and was not ashamed of my chains. I don't know if you know, but one of the most deflating things in ministry is to experience failure, right? To be, feel, you know, as if we've lost some sense of honor or some sense of self-respect, to feel rejected. And it is incredibly empowering in these moments when people, they look at us and they see exactly what our weaknesses are, and yet they are still able to love us. We all have all these insecurities, right? Like I was sharing, our dads, sometimes our dads have these insecurities, and it's easy for us to kind of just like point them out, right? Our friends that we minister with, they have all these weaknesses, and the closer you know them, the more you know their weaknesses. But it is a powerful thing when we see their weaknesses, and still we embrace them. One of the first times I actually preached was in Ann Arbor. Some of us remember this. You might have been on that missions trip. But it was a Monday. Pastor Pete texted me and goes, "Hey, bro, can you preach on Friday? Like, whatever you want. Just preach whatever you want." I was like, oh, my gosh. This is really scary, right? If you have ever shared, like, if you've ever had you come up and share up front, or you probably share from me like 2 or 3 minutes, and you know how nerve-wracking it feels, right? Preaching, especially when you're doing it for the first time, is like that terrifying, except you're speaking for 30 minutes to 45 minutes. So it was really terrifying. I didn't know most of the people in Ann Arbor. And Pastor Pete asked me to come and preach. And I completely bombed. I was so bad. Like, oh man, I wanted the lights to turn off or like someone to pull the fire alarm. I just wanted it to be over. Oh gosh. And then I got done and I walked off the stage and the CSMP Austin Missions team, they were already waiting for me and they immediately gave me a hug, like, "It's okay." Like they knew how horrible it was. They're just like, "It's okay." And it was amazing because I think if they had not done that, I would have just left the ministry. No more preaching for me, right? I'll do everything else. Don't send me up there to preach. But when we embrace others in their weaknesses, we empower them to do the ministry, right? And so many of us are in this situation this summer, whether we're stepping into a new ministry, right? Whether we are stepping up in a ministry, right? Where we are trying something new, going somewhere we have not gone before. What's really difficult is to face failure. What's really amazing is when we meet that failure and those around us surround us and encourage us, embrace us, and remind us it's not just about doing well. This is so important for us as a ministry. There are many things that are changing in the next couple of weeks. How will we embrace and encourage other people? It's so easy to point out all the flaws and say, "Oh, you didn't do that well. Oh, we as the old ministry team, we used to do it so much better than you all do it now. Let me remind you," right? It's so easy to do that. What is difficult is to embrace them and say, "You can do it. I was in that same place." There is no way for us to improve as a church, to improve as Christians, unless those around us encourage us and speak truth into our life and urge us to continue on. How will we reach out to the freshman class during OCR? How will we reach out to the LGBT community, which many of you all know, they're a very closed community, especially to Christians. How will we reach out to international students, which requires so much time, unless we do it embracing our failures, embracing those of us who fail? How will we plant churches in the future unless we embrace those who fail? This is so critical failure is actually a part of the work that God is doing. Next, as we look at this verse, one thing becomes obvious, that our love, our earnest love, has this weird effect of sustaining people. As Paul is talking, he's actually in prison. And he's not like a penitentiary you would find in America. It's most likely like a cave or a hole in the ground, right? And there are bars there, and it's cold, right? And they don't have running water. I don't know if you guys realize this. And so guess what? If you defecate, right, it stays with you. Like, that's the kind of environment that Paul is living in. And as Paul is there, he sees Onesiphorus. And for something in him just kind of breaks. And he, as he looks at this brother, he is so encouraged. And he feels just this extravagant, overwhelming sense of love. The real power that we have as a church, as people come through, many of them Christians, right, having kind of been battered by the world, many of them not Christians coming in through the first time, is we have this privilege to show them an extravagant love, right, an expensive love. And when we show this love, right, we say something about who God is. We remind them that God is a God that cares for them. I don't know if you've ever been so tired and someone has said, you know what, why don't you just, you know, go get some rest, right? Something about that is sustains us, not only because we get rest, because we're reminded, oh my gosh, there are people who really care about me. I don't know, I remember a couple years, some students, I think they were freshmen at the time, they got stuck somewhere, and they called, there might be some of us, I don't remember. They called one of the upperclassmen. I think they were too afraid to call like a leader or something, so they called one of the upperclassmen, and they go, oh yeah, just wait right there. We'll be there right in a second. And they went and picked him up. Something about that, feeling just so, you know, isolated and all of a sudden realizing we're not by ourselves. There are people who care about us. I imagine those freshmen just celebrated once that car pulled up. Like, yeah, we're not lost. That's the same thing that happens in our ministry when we take care of one another, right? I'm not saying that this is always the case. There are many times we will let each other down, but this must be our standard, to love each other extravagantly. And by the way we love one another, the world will know that we are God's. Finally, our service. As we serve one another, these are the things that people remember to their dying breath, right? To the very last breath. You will see many victories and many failures in your life. But the things that last are not these victories and failures. Paul's not just talking about all of his success in the ministry. But as Paul writes to Timothy, he talks about the relationships. These are the things that are the most painful for him. These are also the things that are bring him the greatest joy. It's important for us to know that God has designed us to love one another. And these are the very things that will sustain us. In conclusion, what superpower would you ask for? Some people, they ask for intelligence, right? They ask for abilities. They ask for maybe the ability to turn things into food, right? But what God wants to give to us is he wants to give us love. During the first century, when the church was growing, God actually poured out his power over his people. And they're kind of, I don't know if they're superpowers, like spiritual gifts, right? All these gifts started kind of flowing from the Holy Spirit. And as the Spirit was dispensing these gifts, some were speaking in tongues, some were prophesying, some were healing. Paul reminds them there is a power much greater than these things. 1 Corinthians 13:1-3, Paul writes, "If I speak in tongues of men and of angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all that I have, and if I deliver up my body to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. As we close out, I would like to show us this love represented in cinematic form, right? One of the most famous bromances in all of movie history. It's Frodo and Samwise. Sometimes it's a little bit too much for me, a little bit queasy. But I think this is such a beautiful picture of love and the way that we carry each other's burdens. So if I could have the lights and if we could watch this together.
Hey, God. This, I know. It's all wrong. By rights, we shouldn't even be here. But we are. It's like in the great stories, Mr. Frodo. The ones that really mattered. Full of darkness and danger they were. And sometimes you didn't want to know the end. Because how could the end be happy? How could the world go back to the way it was when so much bad had happened? But in the end, it's only a passing thing. This shadow. Even darkness must pass. A new day will come. And when the sun shines, it'll shine out the clearer. Those were the stories that stayed with you. That meant something. Even if you were too small to understand why. But I think, Mr. Frodo, I do understand. I know now. Folk in those stories had lots of chances of turning back, only they didn't. They kept going. Because they were holding on to something.
What are we holding on to, Sam?
There's some good in this world, Mr. Frodo. And it's worth fighting for.
It's so interesting. As Frodo asks Samwise, what are we holding on to? Samwise immediately picks up Frodo. The amazing thing about The Lord of the Rings is that the main hero is Samwise. I don't know if this has occurred to you all. Frodo Baggins is the centerpiece of the whole story, but Samwise is the hero, which is weird because there are characters that possess inexplicable beauty. There are characters that have wisdom. There are characters with great skill and ability. There are characters with unbending strength. And there's a role for each of these characters. But it is love that carries Frodo into Mount Doom, and it is loyalty that carries Frodo out. So if I could share with us the one thing again, it is that we are called to love. As God empowers his church with many gifts, the thing that we cannot lose sight of is the one superpower is love. The one superpower that God gives us is love. Three applications for us, and then we can rise and pray together. The first one is serve the church. Serve the church. Right? For those of us who are part of ministry teams, don't just do work. right? We can get people to do that. Serve. There is something different about Onesiphorus, the way that he has served Paul, that makes it memorable. Love the church in this way. Love other believers. Love other believers. There are only a couple things that are eternal, and people are eternal. Love the person next to you. Love your dads if you haven't called them yet. Call them. And finally, invite your friends out to church. In the next couple of weeks, we'll have several opportunities. There's going to be events with your life group, right? There are going to be events with our church. You can invite them to Sunday. Invite your friends out. As I've been talking with even focus leaders, one thing that I'm realizing is we don't know how to reach out to our city. I mean, we do a lot of outreach, but we don't know yet, right? And as we invite and reach out to our friends, there's going to be a lot of awkward moments. There's going to be a lot of things that we just don't know how to navigate. But in those moments, encourage each other, be hospitable, love them honestly, serve them generously. Can I ask us to rise? And if we could just pray for our church. We're not going to be this way forever. But there are some things that we cannot lose as a church. As we grow in our ministries and as we grow as people, as God opens doors for ministries, if we lose our love, we lose our power. If you do business, right, we lose people. Can we pray for one another? There are a couple people that I'd like you all to pray for. First, pray for your life groups. We're wanting God to meet us, and that doesn't happen unless we pray and we sow in love. Pray also for our missions team, our little hobbits that we've sent off to Ann Arbor, right? Pray for them. There's an adventure for them. Pray that God will protect them, that God will work in them. And pray as well for your leaders. Those of us who have been leaders or are leaders, you guys know how scary it is when you step out in front for the first time, you have to lead that Bible study or kind of speak to someone. It's terrifying. Pray for them. I invite you to serve and to pray, serve them in our prayers. And so if you could pray for them in a little while, and then we'll sing some songs and get out of this heat. But let's be faithful with our church and those that God has called us to love.